Boy, that's nice. Right after Brother Tony had prayed for those that had taken that and those that do all these things, and then the Lord blesses us with a nice breeze through the doors, and everybody in here felt it. I know you did. Well, I want to tell you again what an honor and pleasure it's been this week. And this week is rapidly drawing to a close. And it's happened really quicker than I realized. On Sunday, man, I was sweating bullets. And it's eased up a little as the week went on. But this has been a quick week. It's been a very fast week. And if I can't get my breath tonight, it's Tony and Kim's fault, because they just kept making me eat. So it's all their fault. I want to show you something. If I can get it out of my pocket, y'all, you wouldn't believe how hard it is to get quarters out of my pocket. I picked this habit up some years ago when I was a little bitty boy. I was probably 7 or 8. And it's just a habit now. It's just something I do and don't think about it. But I flip these quarters and I just do that. But you know what started me doing that? My Uncle Gary Parmer, my mother's brother that lives just up the road from us, I saw him doing that. And I thought that's probably the coolest thing I've ever seen in my life. I have got to learn how to do that. Do y'all realize that there are little kids watching you? I mean, somebody's watching you. Somebody's watching every subtle nuance that you have, every decision you make, every kick that you have. I got another bad habit, and some of the kids asked me this week about that. And I'll just be snapping my fingers like this. Now, how did you do that? I have no idea. It's a nervous habit. But I do it, and I don't think about it. But somebody's watching everything you do, and they're thinking, Tony is the coolest guy I know, and I have got to do that, whatever it is. Hey, y'all laugh, but they're watching you too. There is nobody immune from that. Kids pick up everything. They watch everything that we do, and they see it, and then they reflect it back. So I guess I'll give you this as a warning. Make sure that what you do in front of them is worthy of being reflected back. If you want to follow along with the passage that we're going to read from tonight, and to go along with that little introduction, turn to Matthew chapter 18. Matthew chapter 18, we'll begin reading in verse 1. At the same time came the disciples unto Jesus, saying, Who is the greatest of the kingdom of heaven? And Jesus called a little child unto him, and set him in the midst of them, and said, Verily, verily, I say unto you, except ye be converted, and become as little children, ye shall not enter into the kingdom of heaven. Whosoever therefore shall humble himself as this little child, the same is greatest in the kingdom of heaven. And whoso shall receive one such little child in my name receiveth me. But whoso shall offend one of these little ones which believe in me, it were better for him that a millstone were hanged about his neck, and that he were drowned in the depth of the sea. Woe unto the world because of offenses, for it must needs be that offenses come, but woe to that man by whom the offense cometh. Wherefore, if thy hand or thy foot offend thee, cut them off and cast them from thee. It's better for thee to enter into life halt or maimed, rather than having two hands or two feet to be cast into everlasting fire. And if thine eye offend thee, pluck it out and cast it from thee. It is better for thee to enter into life with one eye rather than having two eyes be cast into hell fire. Take heed that ye despise not one of these little ones, for I say unto you that in heaven their angels do always behold the face of my Father which is in heaven. For the Son of Man is come to save that which was lost. How think ye, if a man have 100 sheep, and one of them be gone astray, doth he not leave the 99 and goeth into the mountains and seeketh that which is gone astray? And if so be that he find it, verily I say unto you, he rejoiceth more of that sheep than of the 99 which went not astray. Even so, it is not the will of your Father which is in heaven that one of these little ones should perish." So, we've all got these images in our mind of people who affect us. People who influence us for good. Now, I want you to think just for a minute. You can probably name several that affect you. There's several sitting in this room tonight that have affected me since I can't remember when, that have been such good influences on me and my family. But there's some handful of characteristics that those folks who are so positively influential in your life share. And we're going to look at some of those as we go through a breakdown of what we just read. I want to give you another example, because I mean, what we're talking about here is a two-way street. What we're talking about, number one, are being the people that are worthy to be heroes to our little ones. All right? And you all have these people in your life that you count your heroes. Now, they may not be the ones that get on the news. Most likely they're not. They're not the ones that have the huge amount of recognition. Those are not my heroes. All right? I know some of those folks that you see on the TV that get a lot of press that do something great. Well, yeah, they're interesting. That's what I'll give them. They're interesting, but they're not my heroes. I'm going to pick on somebody here. I've picked on somebody every night, and I'm going to pick on somebody else. And I'll set the story up like this, because it's made such an impact on me, and this may be the first time he's heard that story, but made an impact on me many years ago. I don't remember the date, and y'all can probably help me with it, but it was around 1994 or 5 or 6, somewhere in the mid to early 90s, that Oklahoma City building was bombed, and all those people and children were killed when that guy built a bomb in the truck and he blew it up. Y'all remember that event. That Sunday, I heard a fellow pray. Blew me away. Still tears me up to think about it. Because I came in and I was mad. I mean, these people blew up something in my country. Hey, it's not overseas. This is my country. This is United States of America. And I was mad and I was thinking all kind of horrible things about the folks that did this. And at the time, I don't think they'd really caught them yet. And Edward Herron prayed a prayer. And in his prayer, he made it a point to pray for these men that had perpetrated this act on our soil. And he did it in such a way that it affected me. Now, he may not know it, but he's one of my heroes. Because he affected me. Well, I want to look at what Jesus is trying to tell us about the men and women we ought to be by using the example of children. All right? Matthew 18, verses 2 and 3, we just read it. "And Jesus called a little child unto him and set him in the midst of them and said, Verily I say unto you, except ye be converted and become as little children, ye shall not enter into the kingdom of heaven." Now, can you imagine the impression that made on that little child? Doesn't say if it was a boy or a girl. Not right here. Doesn't matter. Can you imagine if it were you? What if you were that child? What if in a couple of years Jesus Christ was here and called Marley up and said, "Look, look at this child. Look at the humility and innocence in that child." I mean, who hadn't took a child and looked into those eyes? Those eyes that are totally dependent on somebody for everything, and thought, what innocence. I wish I could be that innocent. Don't we all wish we could be that innocent again? Hey, there's things that we as adults have seen that those innocent eyes hadn't seen. And you can't unsee them. You know what I'm saying? You can't unsee them. And we don't think about that. We don't think about what we allow ourselves to be exposed to that we can't unsee. Well, that's pure innocence. You can't appreciate it enough. Jesus said, unless you become converted. Now, what does he mean by that? Unless we can change ourselves to move back in a direction toward that innocence and that humility. And here's another word for you, that dependence. Unless we can learn to be that type of person, then we're going to struggle spiritually in all that we do. Well, what about, hey, I'm a daddy, so let me put the daddy hat on for a minute. Can you imagine the stories that the daddy of that child told after his child was called up and pointed out by Jesus? Do y'all realize my child was called up? I mean, can you imagine? Wait till I tell his mother. I mean, that's big doings. I mean, that's a big deal. And then years later, when that child told that that man Jesus, before he was crucified, used me as an example. Hey, the Bible's full of examples and it's full of warnings. And God bless those who are examples in the Bible. Wouldn't you want to be one of them? There's a limited number of examples and people that were used as examples in the Scriptures. And there's a really tiny group that were mentioned twice. That's right. Examples. Jesus says to be childlike, but not childish. And childish, let me explain the difference. Childish is, as Sam Dick puts it, when it's all about me. When it's self-centered. Yeah, we've probably all drifted in and out of that at some point in our life. And I hope as we get older, we move away from that. And I think for the most part, people in general do move away from being self-centered. But let me tell you, there is an epidemic in our country of loneliness. There's an epidemic of alcohol and drug abuse. There are legions of babies that are born out of wedlock. And the only way I can describe it is there is a holocaust of abortions that happen in this country alone every year. Divorce rate, hey, it's over 50% now. Less than 50% of the marriages that happen in this nation make it. And the definition of making it has been shrunk down. You know, it used to be until death do you part, you made it. That's not the measure anymore. When our government gives out this information about the statistics about marriage and divorce, that's where these numbers come from. Our government uses 10 years as the make it point. So that number is skewed already. And do you know the number is skewed even worse because every year the number of people who live together outside of marriage increases every year. That number is steadily rising while the divorce rate is steadily following it. And it's because we live self-centered lives. And the child abuse statistics that you can look up online, they're scary. So Christ is telling us as Christians, as individuals, we need to learn to be selfless. Children are selfless. Yeah, sometimes when they're small, they squabble over who's going to get to play with the toy. That's not the same. That's not the same. You let that child's mother cry out in pain because she stumped her toe, and you see who comes running at breakneck speed to check on mama. That's right. And we can see this selfishness that happens in our society. It's not just outside the church, folks. It's in our churches too. Let me describe how it happens in our churches today. When we get self-centered today, what you find is people who want to go, well, you know what? I don't like how y'all treat me over there, Taylor's Crossroads. I think I'll go somewhere else. And then they go there for a while. And then they said, you know, I don't think I like how they treat me on Oak Grove either. I think I'll go to Mount Carmel. And then they don't like how they treat me. But that's what that breeds. And it breeds unhealthy competition between congregations. And you can see that in the denominational world without trying. This group over here has to build a bigger basketball court. Well, this one over here, we'll just build an indoor gymnasium and we'll put seating in here for the. And this one over here, well, we'll have a whole set of baseball fields we'll just build and that'll draw them in. I worked with a lady one time and she said that her preacher had been talking about tithing a lot. It's not just the normal tithe, mind you. Not just the 10%, but there's this sacrificial tithe that's also associated with it he was really preaching on. And after I talked to her for a little while, you know what I found out? I found out the motivation for this course of action. The church was $1 million in debt because they had just built a new entertainment center, for lack of a better description. Competition. To see who can keep up with the Joneses, so to speak. But being childlike has some other positive attributes. It's characterized by an attitude that is outwardly directed in a positive way. And you know, I mentioned dependence a while ago. As Christians, we should be the most dependent group of people in the world. You know why? Our salvation is dependent 100% on Jesus Christ. We've talked about it several times this week. It's not us. Yeah, sure, we have to respond. It's not us. It's not ours for the taking. It's not ours to give anybody else. And, you know, I think that's one of the big lessons from in Matthew chapter 25 and the story about the 10 virgins, the 5 wise and the 5 foolish. You know how, you remember how the end of that story went? Now, they all remember, all 10 of them thought that they were in good shape until 5 of them ran out of oil. But they all thought they were in good shape. At the end of that story, do you realize that one group said, give me some of your preparation? And the other group said, I can't. Now, what that's telling me is that my mother and daddy's salvation is not transferable to me. What that's telling me is just because I know some good people who are living Christian lives, who have dedicated themselves to Jesus Christ and Him crucified and spreading that message, unless I respond to that message myself and unless I am a living sacrifice, they can't share their salvation with me. There's nothing that they can do, whether they want to or not. on the day of judgment, if I'm condemned, I'm sure my dad and mom would want to say, "Yo, give him part of mine, give him part of mine." It's not transferable. It doesn't work that way. It doesn't matter if they want to or not. There are many so-called experts in this world who would tell us that we need to learn to be more self-dependent. We need to learn to be more autonomous, make our own decisions, do our own thing. That's not what the Scripture teaches at all. The Scripture teaches us to be completely dependent upon God's love, to be completely dependent on His salvation that He makes possible through Jesus Christ. The next three verses, verses 5 through 7, Jesus said, "And whoso shall receive one such little child in my name receiveth me, but whoso shall offend one of these little ones which believe in me, it were better for him that a millstone were hanged about his neck and that he were drowned in the depth of the sea. Woe unto the world because of offenses, for it must needs be that offenses come, but woe to that man by whom the offense cometh." In the first century when that was written, that would have had a double meaning to the folks that lived then. It would have meant either a small child, or it would have meant a new convert. So, to put that in context for you, he's not only talking about offending these 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 10-year-olds that are sitting in the crowd. He's also talking about offending the new converts who are young, who are children in the faith. We've got a responsibility. We've got a responsibility, folks. And that's what he's telling us. We've got a responsibility not just to raise up our children and to have influence on our children and to have influence on the children of our brothers and sisters in Christ. We also have a responsibility as adults, as Christians, to have a positive influence on the young converts. Hey, this is a mean world. It is a mean world, and we've seen evidence of that personally, hadn't we? It's a mean world. How many times have you seen a young convert who, at a fairly young age, decides to make that decision to devote their life to Christ? And then you see them for a while, and then you don't see them. Well, did they get the encouragement they needed? Whose job is that? That's right. How much interest do you take in the new converts that you come across in your congregations? We got congregations represented all over the county and up in Atlanta here tonight. Who takes interest in those young converts? Who encourages them? It's our responsibility. It is nobody else's but ours. And if you want to be a living sacrifice, you make it your business to be about their business. That's right. You know, he talks about at the bottom here, he says, whoever should offend one of these little ones which believe in me, it were better for him that a millstone were hanged about his neck and that he were drowned in the depth of the sea. That's a pretty terrible way to think about dying. But you know what? It was a form of capital punishment that the Roman government used in the first century. It was drowning. That ought to be a pretty good deterrent. Because I can't think of many things that terrify me more than the idea of being drowned. Darrell was involved in an operation to rescue a young man yesterday that drowned at Lake Widawi. I can't think of another way to die that would be more terrifying? Not to be able to breathe and to be able to see just above the surface. I could see it. And that's where I need to be to get that breath, but I can't get there. And they used that as a form of capital punishment. And Jesus said, it'd be better if you offend one of these little ones. Well, let me tell you what. Offense is not just what you do. Just like sinning is not just the things that you do. You can sin by leaving things undone that you should do. You can commit offenses to these little ones or these young converts in the same way, by ignoring them. You know, I'll be honest with you. When I was baptized, I was sure as soon as I broke the water that my world had changed. I mean, I was refreshed, I was young, and I thought that all the temptations and problems that surrounded my little tiny world were over. And you know what? I was wrong. And sometimes we paint the picture that's that way. But truth is, the world's just as mean after you're baptized as before. Quite possibly worse. Because now you wear the name of Christ. Now you don't want to listen to their jokes. Now you don't want to go with them down to the place that they go after work. Yeah? So now you stand out. It's tough. It's a mean world. It's a mean world. But let me tell you, this lack of attention to our young people leads to some awful things. But let me tell you what, sin is an awful thing. Because of sin, marriages break up and families fall apart. Children get neglected. Churches split. Because of sin, hearts are broken. Bodies are abused. Relationships shattered. Because of sin, people go to hell. Because of sin, the devil rejoices. Because of sin, Jesus had to die on a cross. And our culture today has desensitized us to sin at an alarming rate. The world's humor causes us to want to laugh. The world's drama entertains us. And the world's value system allures us. And it's hard to hate sin when you're being entertained by it. I heard a fellow tell me one time, he said, it is hard to evangelize when you're toting a six-pack. I never thought about it that way, but that's the truth. Now think that idea through. Think that idea through. If you're trying to talk to people about Christ, and the guy you've just been talking to catches you buying alcoholic beverages down at the store, how's he supposed to look at that? Really? What is he supposed to say? How's he supposed to accept that? I'll tell you one way that happens. I had a guy I worked with one time. He says, I like to go to church down at so-and-so, and I won't call the name of it. Somebody might know it. He said, I like to go to church down there because they don't care if you drink beer. That was his choice. That's how he chose where to go to church. That was what was important to him. Didn't matter how they worshiped. Didn't matter who they worshiped. They just let him drink beer and didn't fuss on it. All right? That's what sin does to us. That's what desensitizing effect has on us when we allow this world to make us calloused, that we don't see it anymore, that we don't hear it anymore, that we don't worry about it anymore. And you know what else he says? He tells us in this passage that we are responsible for each other. Matthew 18 and 8, he says, wherefore, if thy hand or thy foot offend thee, cut them off and cast them from thee, for it is better for thee to enter into life halt or maimed, rather than having two hands or two feet to be cast into everlasting fire. Pay attention and make a choice, he says. Self-examination is so key. Paul told the church at Corinth in 1 Corinthians, he says, to examine yourself. Every now and then it's healthy for us to step back and just take a look at who we are and who we're becoming. That's a healthy thing to do. And then the other characteristic that I want us to pull out of this is sensitivity. In verses 12 and 13, he says, "How think ye if a man have 100 sheep and one of them be gone astray? Doth he not leave the 99 and goeth into the mountains and seeketh that which is gone astray? And if so be that he find it, verily I say unto you, he rejoiceth more of that sheep than of the 99 which went not astray." Does it bother you when people fall away from the church? Not if, but when they do. I've lived long enough now to know that it happens. My pie-in-the-sky optimism has been crushed. So how are we doing on that? I mean, how are we doing on holding on to our members? It's all right for us to get upset when one of our brothers or sisters has a problem. That's beyond all right. We ought to get upset when they're upset. And it's all right for us to rejoice with a brother or sister when something's going right for them. When one of our brothers or sisters has a success in whatever way, we ought to be extremely happy for them. Not jealous. But we ought to be right there cheering them on. You know why? Because we are each other's support group. We ought to rely on each other for that support, for that propping up. Jesus said that caretaker over the sheep is willing to leave the 99... I mean, the 99 to go off and find that one that's left. And is willing to go a long way to do it. Well, let me ask you something. And I'm asking a personal question for every one of you. And I don't want you to take it lightly. I want you to take it like I'm looking at each one of you right in the eyes and asking you a question specifically to you and you alone. How far are you willing to go to keep your brother or your sister from falling away? How far? Is it a financial thing? Would you give up all your finances? Would you give up the things that you have? Would you be willing to do that? If you knew it would save somebody's soul and keep them in the church, would you be willing to do that? The rich young man that Jesus talked to, he had a problem with that, didn't he? He said, what you need to do, if you want to be perfect, what you need to do is you need to sell all that you own, go give it to the poor and come follow me. And he went away sad because he had much riches. You remember that story? Are you willing to let loose of everything that you have if you knew it would mean that you could keep somebody in the church? How far would you go? If you needed to go get them and they were cross country, and I'm not talking about just because they needed a ride. I mean, would you go get them? If they were into something across country and you needed to go get them, would you drop what you were doing so that you could go get them and pull them out of that? Are you willing to do that? What are you willing to do to save us all? What are you willing to give of yourself to keep somebody an active member in the church? Our chief shepherd is Jesus. And we know how far he was willing to go. not only did he die for us, you remember where he was before he came here to do all this suffering? He was with God in heaven. And he gave that up so that he could come here and be ridiculed and be tempted and be spat upon and beaten. That's how far he was willing to go. 1 Peter 5:4, "And when the chief shepherd shall appear, ye shall receive a crown of glory that fadeth not away." And praise be to God that he's coming back for us. He didn't desert us. He didn't desert us. So the three traits that we can see in this description that we've looked at tonight are humility, that innocence, respect for others, and then a sensitivity, being willing to do whatever it takes for our brothers and sisters in Christ. Well, Jesus taught this lesson to those that were there, but are we listening? These are my thoughts. Would you stand with us while we sing the song of encouragement? Encouragement. 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 Encouragement.